Okay, this topic is also a very, very interesting one. I don't know if it's so relevant in our immediate circles, but it's definitely relevant even in the certainly in the Jewish community and even in the Orthodox community. This does happen. These questions do come up, and there are people that do feel the need to avail themselves of these types of procedures. I guess I don't know if you know anybody personally. I don't, but I know that unfortunately it's more common than you might think. And we'll start with this. Okay, I don't know. Say again? Oh, really? I didn't know that. That would have been perfect. I would have read the article. I don't have it. You can fill in. What was the article about? It was about halakha questions, or was it just about people that do it?
I think I should spell it out forward to you.
Yeah.
It basically was along the lines, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
Women who have a hard time finding a shidduch.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so that's
in the Haredi world, actually.
Good. So that's going to be our last case. Let me give you two or three scenarios that I found online. These are not specifically shidduch scenarios. These are scenarios that I found on the internet somewhere or other. I don't think these are specifically Jewish people, but they illustrate for us the questions here. And the shidduch question is, we'll deal with at the very end. There are actually some actual shalos and tshuvos about the shidduch question specifically, and we'll deal with that. That'll be the last part of this year. Okay, scenario number one. Hey, hi there. My name is Laura, and I'm 25 years old. I have three small children. I don't remember if that was the real case or that was my addition. Usually 25-year-old people that are 25 don't usually have three small children already. But all right, she got married early, I guess. I'm married to a great guy. Around the time I hit puberty, my nose started to develop a hump on the bridge of my nose. My dad has a generous nose himself, and it became apparent that I had inherited it. The older I got, the bigger my nose got. The hump became much more pronounced, and the tip of my nose was long and droopy. I cannot begin to tell you how this affected my self-esteem. I wanted to get a nose job more than anything in the entire world. I was so tired of trying to hide my profile with long hair and sunglasses. Being a female with a big nose really stinks. So the question here would be, would halacha permit Laura to undergo the plastic surgery or the nose job that she desires? That's number one. Scenario number two. My surgery was at 16. I hated my nose and the hump that distinguished it. I also hated the fact that I had a deviated septum and could not breathe very well out of the left side of my nose. Looking back, my nose was not that bad at all. It wasn't big. It just had that hump and the tip was a bit thick. The breathing was another issue, but in all honesty, I had a rhinoplasty for cosmetic reasons. The deviated septum was something I likely would have lived with if I didn't have the cosmetic issues. One other thing to note was the fact that I was a very thin teen at the time of my first surgery. Had I waited a few more years, my nose likely would have fit my face better as I matured. Nevertheless, I had it fixed. Does the halacha approve of cosmetic surgery done in this situation? And finally, number three, a woman was bothered by the signs of aging she was experiencing. Her face was beginning to crease and fill with wrinkles. She wanted to investigate the option of a facelift to restore a more youthful appearance. Would the halacha allow a facelift in this situation? What if she had also suffered damage to her face as a result of an accident? These are the three scenarios. Again, the shidduch scenario we'll come back to at the end. It's not one of these three. That's going to be the last case on the shalos and tshuvos. But these three cases are relatively common, certainly in the secular world. And the question is, what does halacha have to say about any of these cases, and what are the factors that go into making a halacha decision? What are the halachic issues involved, and how do the poskim work through these types of issues to come to different decisions as to whether these things are permitted or not?
And just when you're doing this, to set up a scenario, all three of those were women. If it's different halachically for men, who can supposedly, I don't, quote me if I'm wrong, pluck their eyebrows, I want to know if there's different issues for that.
Okay.
For men versus these three women you have in your story.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. All right. The issue of men probably shouldn't be directly different, though we'll see. Maybe some of the, you know, the I guess the, what you call them, the wild card factors, meaning the kinds of things that you can't actually pin down as being this isn't something tangible, intangibles in terms of.
Men who turn gray should not dye their hair.
Right. So dyeing hair may be different than cosmetic surgery. Okay. There may be there are actually specific, that's not on our source sheet here.
Okay.
Just tell you there are specific halachic questions or prohibitions really of dyeing your hair or taking certain hairs. The specific case in the halacha is really pulling out. Let's say if you have some gray hairs and let's say black hairs or brown hairs, to pull out the gray hairs from the black hairs is halachically potentially very problematic.
Okay.
And some of the questions of dyeing your hair also may be questions of Beged Isha, that dyeing hair is often considered to be something which is done by women specifically, and therefore for men to do that also is going to be problematic. That doesn't mean there will never be a heter, but it means in general those types of things are definitely problematic, and in general should be avoided in the lack of other more pressing reasons to permit them. Basically, that's, we'll leave it at that.
Does it have to be a heter, or if the times have changed to allow for?
Perhaps there may be more reason to allow. Meaning, if, I don't know if this is true today, but if in society, again, this is getting more into questions of Beged Isha, which is not directly the question of cosmetic surgery, is not specifically an issue of Beged Isha versus Beged Ish, but when it comes to those questions, something which in general society is more has become more common for men, let's say, over the years, there may be more room to permit it. Meaning, Beged Isha may be the type of halachic prohibition which may change along with the times. That doesn't mean that it's the right thing to do, but some of my Rabbeim definitely felt that, let's say, getting an earring, maybe even a nose ring, but certainly an earring, is something which, I don't know if it's appropriate for a man to have an earring. That's a question. But halachically, is it a problem? Beged Isha, the answer today is probably not, because there are enough people out there in society that are male that have earrings that you may not violate the Torah prohibition of Beged Isha if you got one. That's, again, a question you have to balance, meaning just because everything that's permitted doesn't necessarily mean that it's encouraged or recommended. And this is the type of situation also. You want to look like a dignified person. If you're a yeshiva bachar, we say that you want to look like a ben Torah. Okay, so a ben Torah dresses in a certain way. And even if we wouldn't necessarily call ourselves yeshiva bachar, but again, people that are b'nai Torah, people that are Orthodox Jews, generally dress in a specific manner, and it's not necessarily appropriate to be doing other things, even if they're not necessarily halakhically prohibited. That's a question, again, of what is common in the times and what is the type of impression that you want to give over when people see you, and when you do something like that, what will people be thinking of you? How will people view you if you're wearing things like that? That's basically the question. Those are the questions when it comes to Beged Isha in a nutshell. Most of these questions, again, are not exactly the same thing in terms of the cosmetic surgery. The issues are a slightly different group of issues, which we're going to talk about right now. Okay, any other questions about that before we move on to the main part here? Okay, good. If you want to have a whole share on that, we could have a whole share on that as well.
Different than face, also your face is also face problems, having
right.
Different things, obesity, stuff like that.
Okay, so we'll see. Again, I think most of the halakhic issues will apply regardless of where it is. But you'll judge for yourself. Okay, let me know if you have more comments along the way. Okay, great. Okay, so the first question, the first starting point here, those of you who have the sheet or the computer with the sheet on it, is the question of when do we allow a doctor to heal you, to do something to you. So if you look here in the Gemara in Bava Kama on Daf Pei Hei.
So you're skipping part two of the information?
Yeah, so right now, I don't think we have time to go through this. You should feel free on your own to go through the medical information here. It's very, very interesting. Again, as you see here, there are obviously different types of cosmetic surgery and different goals for doing it, either to make yourself look nicer or to reconstruct, meaning for medical reasons to make yourself, to repair damage, which is done, or things that don't work properly or don't look proper. Those two things, maybe as we go through, we'll see that they may be a different halakhic conclusion when it comes to those two types of goals. When it comes to, again, nose surgery and facelift and the different possibilities here of what it does and how it's done, that may or may not make a halakhic difference. In general, it probably does not. However, we'll see there may be one case which may actually there may actually be a big difference when it comes to one of these types of things, which we'll get to in a few minutes. Okay. So the Gemara says that the Tanya Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Omer V'rapo yirapei mikan shenitzen reshut l'rofei l'rapot. The Torah says that this is in the context of if you damage somebody, if you injure someone, so we say that you're obligated to repay them, to reimburse them in five different ways. We're not going to go into this now, but this is the damage, nezek, tsar, ripui, shevet, and boshet are the five different things. One of those things is ripui. Ripui literally means to cure. That's generally understood as the doctor bills. Okay, that if you injure somebody, you have to pay for their doctor bills if there are any. What the Gemara here does is takes that a step further and says that v'rapo yirapei, he shall surely cure him. The double language tells you something even more, even farther beyond that. And that is, mikanshe nitin reshut l'rofei l'rapot. From here we see that permission is given for a doctor to cure. Meaning the Torah is telling us that we apparently, we'll see in a second in Tosfot and Rashi, we might have thought that apparently maybe a doctor is not allowed to cure you. The chiddush of this pasuk, of the double language here, according to the Gemara, according to Devei Rabbi Yishmael, is that a doctor is indeed allowed to cure you. So basically the concept is as follows. The concept is that you might have thought that maybe God is doing something to you, that you would feel that you're not supposed to go against his will. If he made it such that you got injured for in whatever way that happened, then perhaps you might think that, well, God wanted it to happen, I have no right to go and try to fix it myself. So the Torah is coming along and telling you that's not the case, that you the doctor has been given permission, and then most of the Rishonim say that not only is there permission given, it's an obligation for the doctor to go out and heal a person. So now, Tosfot here says the following, in the second source. He says, that's very nice, but why do you need the double language? Why does it need to say rapo yirape? Why can't it just say the word rapo or yirape one time without the double? So he answers you, you can answer, he says, well, fine, you might have thought that maybe when it comes to if a person injured you, then maybe that's not considered to be in God's in the purview of God's activity. Meaning, yeah, God does what he needs to do, but at the end of the day, if a person injured you, God would never say that you can't go to a doctor to get a cure, because it's not a clearly divine action. That would be certainly okay. However, maybe you might have thought that specifically in a case where it's a natural sickness, it comes from Shemayim, there's nothing you could have done about it, okay? Something that has nothing to do with anything that you did or anything that happened to you, because of other actions, you might have thought in that case it's nira kisoter gzera melech. The it's as if you're contradicting the decree of God in that case. And again, the chiddush of the pasuk is that even there, when it's a natural type of thing, it's still halachically considered to be permitted. That's what Tosfot contributes to the discussion here. Now, the question is how do we apply this in a situation of plastic surgery or cosmetic surgery? And the analysis can be broken down as follows. And you can tell me if you don't like this or not, but this is the way I think you have to break it down. You have to think about it as follows. Perhaps you would say, or I guess the question is, do we say that the permission of a doctor to engage in a quote-unquote cure is specifically given in a case where there's something wrong? Or do we say no? When the doctor, once the Torah gives permission for the doctor to do what he wants to cure you, what that means is the doctor can do whatever he wants and whatever you want to your body. And of course, the nafkamina, the major practical difference, is really our case. Okay, let's say for now somebody who wants cosmetic surgery because they don't like the way that their nose looks. Some of the scenarios we had before. Would you say in that situation that, well, there's not really anything wrong? Okay, you're perfectly healthy. You're perfectly fine. You just don't like the appearance. Is that included in the heter of doctors to heal you? Yes, or maybe not. Maybe a doctor is not allowed to engage, and you're not allowed to employ a doctor to heal you in a case where there's not really anything wrong. How far do we extend this question of rapo yirape? That's the first question that you need to deal with when it comes to these types of issues. Yeah, Shmuley.
Well, it may not be that there's anything physically wrong, but okay. Psychologically there's a problem, and maybe by making a physical change, a pure psychological defect.
Okay, so that's a good point. We'll get to that also in a little bit. How do we take into account halachically the mental or the psychological anguish or the psychological problems that are at play here underneath the surface? Is that halachically considered to be significant? So that's going to be an important question. And we'll see that the poskim discuss that. The first question I would have, though, is there, meaning that may be true, but is the proper way to solve a psychological problem? Meaning maybe the first address for a psychological problem like that is not your doctor or your surgeon who's going to do surgery for you, but rather is your therapist. You need to go see a psychologist, right? That's what I would say. The first, if somebody is unhappy with the way they look, they may have a self-esteem problem, and that's not something that a nose job is going to solve necessarily. It might help, but it'll find other ways to manifest itself, perhaps. If this is not a problem, there are always things that come up if you have a problem in self-esteem, and this is not necessarily the right address for that. That would be the question that you need to consider very seriously. First, and that's even though it's not directly a halachic question, that's a very important component of this that a posek will absolutely, assuming that he's competent, will consider very seriously as well before he gives any type of possible heter for cosmetic surgery. He has to analyze, well, is this really necessary? Is this really the right method of going about this. And if it's not, maybe that'll mean that even if there is a heter, there's less of a reason to use the heter if this is not necessarily, if you're not going about it in the proper way. That's the question that you need to ask yourself. And that, by the way, is the reason why all these cases are very individual. The answer to one person may be very different than the answer to somebody else, because that issue may be different for different people depending on where they're coming from here, why they want this in the first place.
You could argue that even with a type of surgery where a person may be told, look, you know, the prognosis is not very good,
right?
Unfortunately. If we do this surgery, we can give you a slightly better prognosis, but the end result is likely to be the same. You know, you can go through this procedure, but you're just putting off the inevitable a little bit longer. And then you would say the same. Well, then what's, you know, if there's no, it's not, you're not curing the problem,
right?
Then that's maybe just that surgery is as questionable, or the validity of that surgery is questionable as having a nose reshaped.
Right.
Well, there's a question I was actually curious about, not necessarily in the context of this year, but there was a recent, in the UK, actually, they came up with a law that over a certain age, those people who suffer strokes are not going to be able to get meds that are going to either improve their quality of life or help them out. You know, in a sense, they're rationing medicine to those who might benefit more. So would you say that it would apply, would be a logical approach to something like that?
Those are very, very major questions, and they, each of them, I guess, either together or separately, deserve their own shir, and hopefully we'll be able to do that at some point when we talk more about not that we want those to be end of life issues, but they often end up being closer to the later part of life than we've been talking about in terms of birth and cosmetic surgery, which is still relatively early on the totem pole, you know, starting from the beginning of life till, you know, let's say age 20, 15, 20, 25. Hopefully at some point we will talk about end of life issues, we'll talk about some of those issues also that involves risk taking when it comes to surgery, which is somewhat of an element here also, and we'll see the beginning of the discussion in the postcum here on our topic. Obviously it's much more drawn out when you're talking about serious risks to life here. The risks are not that great, but that's a major, major issue there. And also in terms of care when it comes to dealing with pain, how important is it and how worthwhile is it to deal with halakhically, is to deal with care when it comes to pain, and if it's not necessarily going to help the situation that much, that's a major, major question also, and hopefully we'll have time to talk about it. All right.
Isn't the Torah also specific in its lashon?
Which lashon?
Rapor yarpei is a specific lashon that has to do with ameliorating some difficulty, as opposed to using the word shapir.
Right.
Shapir is something we use, and it usually refers to land. When you take an existing piece of land, nothing is necessarily wrong with the land.
Right.
But you might be able to make it better by doing the activity.
Right.
So refuah has to do with more of like.
Yeah, no, you're right. That you're absolutely right. And that would be the reason to say that it shouldn't, that only for actual cures would apply. The question is, can you stretch it a little bit more? Meaning, is it dafka or lav dafka? Do you say that? Rifu is just, that's the basic case. Meaning, the most common case where you need a doctor is where something is wrong and you want to cure it. But once that's in place, if that basis is there, the question is, can you stretch it a little bit more to a case where, you know, there's not necessarily anything wrong? I think in all the cases that both of you mentioned before, I think the question of refuah will definitely be in place. Meaning that's not going to be a question of refuah. It's going to be more a question is, do you allow yourself to take certain major, major risks to life when what you might get out of it may not be that great? Okay, or, you know, when it's just a question of controlling the pain. I don't think anybody will say that it's not a question of refuah. To some degree, the question is it worth it when it comes to the other factors at play there? This case is much more of a lack of refuah in the first place. Okay, I think the surgery, the plastic surgery type case is really a very, very major lack of possible lack of refuah. And therefore, this is a major, major problem here. So on this part of the issue, there really are two sides. Now, the first side is discussed and put forth by the Tzitzel Yezer, by Waldenberg, and Chelok Yad Aleph, Simon Men Aleph, Mem Aleph, is the next source on the sheet here. So he says here, he first quotes a sefer called Shari Tzedek, not related to the hospital, but he himself actually did work in the hospital. That way, he was the rabbi of the hospital for many years. His response, I don't have the sefer myself, I believe that the discussion there, we're not going to get into this now, this really goes back to our last topic, was that some people wanted to say that maybe the concept of curing doesn't apply to somebody who has infertility problems, that that's also not considered to be somebody who's sick, and therefore women that are infertile maybe do not or cannot be subject to a doctor curing them. Yeah, that's the original discussion that he quotes there. Rollenberg disagrees with that, and he points out that most poskim do not accept that definition when it comes to infertility. However, what he does do is he tries to apply that definition in our case. Let's take a look now inside. It says Laniya Dati, if you have the sheet. Laniya Dati, Komash and Torah Shilarap. Every time or every case that the Torah says that the doctor has been given permission to cure, Hainu Kol Choli V'Cholmaka Asher Nitava, that refers to any type of sickness or illness that has come about, Acharkach Shlo Nodakach Rak B'Tivo. Okay, that basically was not natural. It's not a natural problem. It comes later in life. But for that case, he would be allowed, according to the Torah, to go to a doctor to cure him. But anything that he's created that way, that's the way that he was born, mileda from birth, the ainbo shum choli okev klal, and this is important, of course, and there's no type of sickness or pain at all, meaning if there is a sickness or a pain involved, and even if you're born that way, obviously, he's not saying that you can't fix it, right? If a child is born, God forbid, with, you know, a heart problem or this problem, he's not saying that you don't have to do surgery and you shouldn't fix it. No. I think if there's no problem of sickness or pain at all, then in that case, if you want to go to a doctor, then she is kanubiotzer to fix him, to make him better. Aidera fuot. Kegon isha zu, such as this woman. Again, this is back in the case of the woman who's in infertile. So nechlata klal v'nomer laharofe shirapena shetelid af im einza machmat choli v'keiv. And even if it's not something which is actual sickness, masha enam it's aberet that she's not she can't get pregnant. Liadati minayin arglayin lahatira kazot midin toria. Waldenberg quoting the Shaar Tzedek here says, I don't know what the heter is for that. So if you look at the next paragraph here, again, Waldenberg was just quoting the Shaar Tzedek at that point, who says that is radical. He says you can't cure a woman who's infertile. Ulam of Waldenberg says in kinidun shalah Shaar Tzedek pashut lahatir. He says in that case it's pashut today. It's been accepted that's clearly permitted to cure such a woman and to try to do infertility testing and to try to get around the problem. Kivim minhav shalah yisrael is as the minhag yisrael attests to. Aval yesh l'dati hashlachot l'chidush shoze. He says, but there are other applications and consequences of this chiddush that the Shaar Tzedek mentions. Pinogel and ituchim plastim when it comes to plastic surgery, shimvatzim kait harufim that the doctors are trying to put forth to the public at this time. This was written a number of years ago, of course. It's l'harbi v'nei adam l'shem yifu evarim to make them look better. Bechadome similar issues. Be'ein shumach lokei when there's nothing wrong. V'yesh makom gadol atayna zos and there is room. There is a lot of room. He says, for this type of claim, shalo al kegon dahu shenet natar v'shalor filarapot, that this is not the type of situation where the Torah gave permission for the doctor to cure. Skip the brackets. And maybe people do not have permission to give the doctors, to allow the doctors to injure them, l'shem natar azot, for this type of purpose. And then maybe the doctor doesn't have permission to suggest this procedure and to go through with it. And that, of course, by the way, is going to be very important because that would mean perhaps that even if you're not the one who wants to get the surgery, you're the doctor who is asked to perform the surgery, perhaps there's room to say that a Jewish doctor or an Orthodox doctor maybe can't perform this type of surgery. That's another factor to consider. One has to know, says Rav Waldenberg, and believe that there is no creator like our God. He basically engraves in each of us, and makes us in his image. Basically says that God has made every single one of us in his image the way that he feels is appropriate for each of us. We cannot add to that and we can't take away from that. Meaning, Rav Waldenberg seems to say that this is very problematic to engage in this type of surgery, mainly, according to him, because of the fact that he doesn't believe that God would want us to take the body that he gave us and make it better or do things to it when there's nothing wrong in the first place. That's Rav Waldenberg's approach. Okay, this is the more machmir approach. Before you even get to any of the other halachic issues, his main problem here is really more of a hashkafic problem. It's really a problem having to do more with whether God wants us to be taking the body he gave us and doing things to it when nothing is needed to be done in the first place. That's where he's coming from, and he seems to say he takes a more stringent approach to the issue.
If we look at other things that we're not supposed to do in terms of like things like tattooing, then arguably there's not there's a difference between reshaping your body and
right.
and dying part of your skin in that respect. And of course, the fundamental issue is we believe we're created with cell and melanin. So then, what's wrong with your nose or your face if you subscribe to that principle?
You're right. I'm not sure if I understand your question, though.
No, it's just making
a comment. Okay. The only difference with the discussion of the tattoo is that the tattoo, the Torah explicitly prohibits making a tattoo. Meaning it says, K'tovah kaka l'tenu b'vsarchem, you can't put a tattoo on. Here, it's less clear. Meaning the Torah does not say you cannot get a nose job. The Torah doesn't say you can't make your face look nicer. So you can sort of take the same values, and if you say that the part of the issue of the tattoo is this value and apply it, then you're absolutely right. But it's not clear that that's the only issue in the tattoo. The tattoo issue may also be in some issue of ancient pagan worshippers. That was a type of a Wadazara or other types of things. At the end of the day, it doesn't necessarily matter. Once the Torah says it's usher, you know, there's a question of how far can you extend that to a different situation. In terms of the issue of chaval, of injury, that we're going to get to right now, and that is a major question here. That is really, I guess, the major strictly halachic question when it comes to cosmetic surgery. At any rate, most of the posts that have talked about this issue do not necessarily take Waldenberg's approach. Okay, they don't necessarily disagree with it, but they don't put it in the front and center of their presentation of the issue of plastic surgery. Most of them strictly deal with the halachic issues, and they don't usually bring into the picture this question of, well, does God let us do this or not? Presumably, most of those posts felt that was not necessarily a problem. And I guess what they would say is something along the lines of that, what we talked about in terms of infertility, that if modern technology allows us to do certain things like this, then we're a full partner with God when it comes to these types of things and making the world a better place. And if you can get around any other halachic issues, then there's no reason why a doctor should not be allowed and encouraged to help a person make himself feel better and to look better than he would have otherwise. That's presumably, again, they don't spell this out, but that's presumably what most of the other posts that do not mention the factor of Waldenberg, what most of them would say. And then the question will become a more strictly halachic issue, as we'll see right now, is does the halacha permit you to engage in the procedure involved in the surgery in the first place? And that's what we'll talk about right now. The main question that the posts talk about when it comes to the surgery, the prohibition, is the prohibition of chavala. And we know that there is a prohibition of injuring somebody. And again, this of course is related to the question of the doctor, but the main idea is that you're not allowed to injure yourself. Here we go. If you take a look in, we're going to skip section 2. This is the question of chaval and shabbos. That we're going to leave out. And that's also interesting and perhaps as relevant as well. But let's look at section number 3. Okay, parameters of chaval for injury and application to plastic surgery. If you look at the second source in this section here, this is the Rambam in Pilchos Chovel Mazik Perek Hei Halacha Aleph. So the Rambam says the following: Asur l'adam l'chaval bein batzmo vein b'chaveiro. A person is not allowed to injure, whether that would be injuring himself or injuring his friend. Either one of those is prohibited, meaning even injuring yourself is also usur. For lo achovel bilvad, not only injuring, ela kol amake adam kasher miyisrael, even somebody who hits another person, even without an actual injury, if you hit somebody, ben katan ben gadol, a katan or a gadol, ben isha, man or woman, derech nitzayon, in a manner of nitzayon, we'll come back to that, what that means shortly. Hareza over below tasle, this person has violated a negative prohibition. Shenemar lo yosif lahakoto, he shall not continue to give him additional blows. This, of course, is talking about the discussion of malchus. Yeah, this is talking about somebody who violates a prohibition in the Torah, and he gets flogged. He gets lashes, 39 lashes. So the Torah says the person who's chayav malchus, who gets 39 lashes, you can't give him more malchus than he's supposed to get. Meaning, even somebody who's supposed to get the malchut in the first place, you can't give him more than 39. And more, giving him more than that is a Torah prohibition. So the Rambam derives him, he's here at Torah shalalahosif ba'akara chote kalva chomer lamaket at tzaddik. If the Torah warns you not to hit a person who's a sinner more than is required, then certainly kalva chomer, somebody who's a tzaddik, a righteous person who's innocent, certainly you're not allowed to hit him as well. And that's how the Rambam explains, that's how we know that that chovel, that injuring a person is forbidden. And the Rambam, of course, didn't make this up. You know, the mission of the Gemara Bava Kama clearly prohibit somebody from injuring other people, as we mentioned previously. And it's clear from the mission of the Gemara also that there are at least some opinions, and this is how we paskin, that forbid you from injuring yourself as well. That's basically what the Rambam is getting at here. And then the question becomes, certainly cosmetic surgery involves an element of injury, okay? Almost certainly. Most of the time, any type of surgery involves invasive procedures usually that would probably qualify as injury. And what we're going to discuss now is what exactly are the specific, precise halakhic parameters of injury. But at least on the surface, it would seem to involve the question of chavala. And then the shaila is it permitted to engage in possible chavala when it comes to this type of issue of plastic surgery?
Possible to engage in chavala if you're taking a martial arts class?
That's a great question. We will talk about that in just a minute. Okay, we'll see if we can figure out some of the answers. Mm-hmm. It's a good question. The same question applies to any other types of things as well. Let's say an Orthodox Jew who's a boxer. Okay, there aren't very many of them, but I think there's one, right? There's one, right? I forgot his name, but he's pretty famous. That's a shaila. Is it halakhically prohibited to be a boxer? Is it halakhically prohibited to play tackle football? Does the league here play the football people? Do you play tackle football or touch?
We don't, but there's a group of Meir Sheva.
But what?
There's a group of Meir Sheva that they're playing on our field, but they are in pads and all that.
Uh-huh. So that's a major question as well. Any of these types of physical contact sports where people get injured is a major, major question. Halakhically, is that prohibited or not? And I'll see right now what some of the parameters are, and you can draw your own conclusions. I guess this is not... we're talking about medical ethics here. We're not talking about sports ethics, although that's also, again, a very, very interesting discussion. But you could draw the conclusions based on what we say here. What would perhaps be the halakha in that situation? Basically, the major ways of defining chavala according to the halakha are the following. Again, we're not going to develop all the sources here, but I'll just give you the basic bottom line. In general, we'll see the first source in section number 3 in a minute, but I'll just tell you just before we even look at it. Generally, chavala is usually looked at as one of two things: either causing somebody to bleed, number one, or causing somebody to get a black and blue mark. Yeah, those are generally speaking in halacha, those are the two. And that's, by the way, the section that we skipped in section number 2. That's what you see, certainly in Hilchos Shabbos, when it comes to you're not allowed to be chovel, to make an injury, to injure somebody on Shabbos. Generally speaking, the Rishonim discussed those are the two definitions in Hilchos Shabbos as well for injury, either causing somebody to bleed, which of course is one of the reasons why brushing teeth is potentially problematic if you brush your gums and they often bleed, or floss and they might bleed. That's a major question that has to be dealt with in terms of that. Also, creating a black and blue mark also is discussed by the Rishonim there as being potentially a violation of Chavala. And in the case of surgery, also the question is, do the same parameters of chavala apply there as well? So if you look here, let's take a look at the first case, the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Reish Mem Aleph in Yoredeah, Siv Gimel. This is the first source in section 3. So we'll see that they do seem to apply at least to some degree here. The case here is the following. The case here is where, let's say your father has a thorn stuck in his body and he needs somebody to take it out. So it says, Hayat Kotz Tachov Laviv. Okay, if you have a thorn stuck in your father's body, lo yotzeinu, that you, the son, are not allowed to remove it for him. Why? Shema yavo lasos b'chabur, because we're afraid, and this is based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, we're afraid that you may come to make a chabura, to make a black and blue mark on your father's skin if you try to take it out. And that, of course, is prohibited because not only is it prohibited just on a regular level, it's prohibited as a chiyuv misa. If you cause an injury to your parents, you are absolutely makeh avivi motumat, you're chayav misa, and therefore we're very, very stringent about these types of cases. And therefore in the halacha here as well, we prohibit a son from removing a thorn from his father. V'cheinim hu mekiz dam, or if he does bloodletting, which we don't do so much of today, but in the Talmud's times that was very common. So if you let blood, a rofe, or you're a doctor, v'yakiz dam laviv v'yachtoch lo'ever, and you cannot let blood for your father, and you can't cut off a limb, again, because it creates a situation of bleeding, which again is going to be a violation of chavala, which again for a parent has very severe consequences, a potential chiyuv misa. Af al pishem chavin l'rafu, even though you intend that it's supposed to be for medicinal purposes, and that's the key point here for us, that at least when it comes to a parent, even when it's for refua, the halacha prohibits it. The Rama adds in here, and this is also a very important limitation, the Haggah, the Rama adds, b'med dvarim, when is this said? Meaning, when do we prohibit this? B'shiyesha macher lasa, when there's somebody else who can do the bloodletting instead of you. But if there's nobody else who can do as good a job as you, you are the top doctor in the field when it comes to bloodletting. Okay, the top bloodletting doctor. Again, that's not so common today, but you get the point. Okay, v'hu mitzta'er, and your father is mitzta'er. He's in pain. He needs somebody to help him, and you're the best person for the job. In that case, harehu mekizo v'choteichlo. In that case, you are allowed to help him. K'fima shiyershu lasso, as much as he permits you to do. Meaning, basically, if there's anybody else, if there's another option for somebody who could do just as good a job as you, then you, a child, are not allowed to do this because of the prohibition of chavala. If there is nobody else who can do as good a job as you, or you're afraid that they won't do as good a job, so then the halacha is that you are permitted. Again, this is another interesting question, which we're not going to go into now, but I guess the major question would be when the son says, the father says, I only want my son to do it. He doesn't say that nobody else could do it, and presumably another doctor could do a good job as well, but he says, I only want my son. I refuse to have anybody else do it. That's a question. How do you deal with that?
So then why can't the son take the thorn out of the father?
Say that again?
Why can't the son take the thorn out of the father if there's only the two of them there?
See, if it's only the two of them there, then it might be permitted. What we're talking about, again, this is not just the case of a thorn. This could be any situation where a father needs to undergo surgery. And the child is, the son is the neurosurgeon, the son is the doctor, he's the one who would do the surgery. Can he do it? And according to the halacha, the answer should be preferably not if there's another option, and usually there are other options. Usually there are baruch shem, there are enough doctors, but again, if he's a very specific specialist, certainly there's room to allow it. But otherwise, it seems that it's preferable not to. But what do you do when the father says, I only want my son doing the surgery, I don't want anybody else? How do you deal with that? Again, that's not exactly our topic now, but it's a very, very interesting and important question to think about. Would you say?
He came up, twice. My father wanted me to give him a shot, and he was insistent that I give it to him. I was a medical student, whatever. I was certainly capable. I discussed it with him and whatever, and I was given permission, whatever. And then another case where my mother had a thorn in her finger.
Oh my gosh.
Whatever, she really did. And I wasn't enthusiastic. I thought that someone else could do it. It made it into the Jewish press with names changed and all that to protect the innocent.
Really?
Where I made a big deal. Yeah, if your mother really wanted to do it, you should do it. It made it to the Jewish press. My
Interesting.
Mom told me who sent it in, and she sent me the article and all that.
Interesting. So, again, I didn't see this question in print in the tshuvas. I didn't look so carefully right now. I don't remember seeing it in print, but my feeling, my tea would be that it's better to try to convince the father or the mother that they should be okay to have somebody else do it. But if they're insistent and it's going to cause them even more stress and mental anguish for somebody else to do it than you, then it's in that case it would be permitted for you to do it. That would be my feeling, which I guess basically fits with what you were told as well. Okay, good. So that's, again, a very important, interesting side point. When it comes to chavala here, so we have the question, does plastic surgery qualify as the problem of chavala? And so far up to this point, the answer would seem to be yes, meaning normally, this type of surgery is an invasive procedure usually and would probably qualify as to be included in this prohibition. And therefore, even if it's not apparent we're talking about, regular chavala is usually usur. Even if you do it to yourself, it would seem to be that would be enough of a reason to prohibit doing plastic surgery, just like that. That's at face value. There are, I guess, two possible responses to this that we can give to potentially permit it. The first one is that there may be one type of procedure which does not necessarily violate the technical parameters of chavala. And that is, if you go back now to the medical section, that is the Botox injections. This is number, in the medical information, this is number two. You can read the one little paragraph there, the Botox injections. But basically, these types of injections are just that, they're injections. And there's a major question, halacha, whether injections qualify as chavala or not. Meaning it could be, it's very possible that injections do not violate the prohibition of chavala, especially when you take it, you put it in your skin, you insert it underneath the skin. That may not necessarily qualify as chavala, depending on what happens. Maybe you could tell me better. In this case, I think that it certainly doesn't cause blood, that's for sure. And I believe that it doesn't really cause too much of a black and blue mark either, depending on how well it's done. But again, that you have to check a little more. And this paragraph doesn't really say that. But again, the Botox injections, potentially, if you have an option, meaning if you're going to do it, this may be the better one to do, because it may limit the amount of chavala questions that are involved because of the way that it's done. As opposed to some of the other surgeries, which are pretty clear that they are invasive and they're definitely more problematic, halachically. Botox, there's more room to allow, and therefore that would be an important factor to keep in mind when you're talking about this. Okay, that's response number one to why maybe it's not considered to be chavala. Response number two is much broader. And this response is, I guess you would call it a very, very basic redefinition of chavala in our context. And this is basically fleshed out by the Irv Moshe, by Irv Moshe Feinstein and Choshe Mishpat Chelek Beis Simen Samach Vav, which I have in the source sheet here as well. So he deals with basically our case of surgery, we'll see in a minute. And what he tries to do is analyze the definition of the Rambam that we read before and try to explain that in this type of situation it does not qualify as chavala. Let's see why. He says, I was asked about a young girl who wants to make herself look nicer, so that people should jump all over her to bury her, meaning she wants to get a good shirach. Through what the doctors have created today. Again, this was written a number of years ago. I did need tuach through a procedure, a surgery, shu chavala beguva, which involves injuring the body, meaning surgery, basically. Is it permitted based on, or prohibited based on, the prohibition of injuring yourself? Now, the nature of the question here is not clear exactly how serious the problem is of this girl. And we'll see at the end of the tshuva, Ramosha does make reference to that, and then in the next source, there's going to be a big question of how far do we take this. But already in the question, you already note the case here is not specifically that she needs to get a good shit. It doesn't say that she's worried she won't get a good shit. It says that she wants to do it in order so that people should jump on her. Yikbatu alel akadja. The question is, how do we view that? Meaning, how liberal is, even in the question, how liberal is this trying to be here? Is this talking about a very special case where it's going to be very difficult for her to get a shidduch otherwise? Or does it mean, no, she thinks she'll have a better chance at shidduchim if she looks better, she looks prettier? That's a question, which is not so clear what type of case, exactly how far was Moshe talking about here when it comes to these situations. But let's see what he has to say here. It's like, I cut out for you certain two paragraphs of the tshuva, and we don't have the whole thing here, but I'll cut it for you, we'll read the two paragraphs that are the most important. He says that the Rambam learned the following, meaning he basically analyzes different opinions of the Rishonim, and now he focuses on the Rambam. Basically, the case we just had, that the prohibition is violated when it's done derech nitzayon. Now, nitzayon is basically another word. Anybody know what the word nitzayon means? Nitzim, anashim irim nitzim, means to fight, okay, or a fight. A derech of nitzayon of being confrontational, a physical of fighting, ubizayon, or according to one version is bizayon, is embarrassment. The imkain, he says, if so, that's the parameters for chavala, but uvda zusha chavala huliafosa, in this case, when the injury is to make her look better, hari eno derech nitzayon ubizayon, that doesn't qualify as derech nitzayon or bizayon, either one. It's not fighting, it's not embarrassing. Maybe it shouldn't apply in that case. If you say that for hitting your friends, it's only usher if it's done in a way which is to hit him, meaning to hit him as a fight, or to embarrass him. Then perhaps for you yourself also, when you injure yourself, it's not usher unless it's derech nitzayon uvizayon. He says, if your friend asks you to do it, then he wants to say that maybe it should be permitted. And again, he wants to say here, we're not going to read the next couple lines inside, but basically, he wants to say that even not according to the Rambam, even according to other people, if it's going to be for their benefit, okay, such as for this girl, who she's trying to make herself look nicer, he says that even if you don't hold like the Rambam, it's considered to be, if it's for her benefit, it's halachically permitted, and certainly according to the Rambam, when it's not qualifying as derech nitzayon, it should be halachically permitted. That's what he wants to say here. Again, the second paragraph, the next paragraph in Rav Moshe, we're going to skip for now. You can read it on your own if you like. But basically, that's where Rav Moshe comes down here at the end of the day, basically paskening that because it's for noise, for beautification purposes, to make her look nicer, it's for her benefit. The halacha is that it does not violate, according to Rav Moshe, the prohibition of chavala, and therefore it is permitted when it's done to help her get a shidduch. And this is a very, very important shuva of Moshe. Moshe is very, very lenient in this case, as you can see. Yeah. Question is just how far does this go? Meaning, is Rav Moshe giving a blanket heter for any girl that wants to get a nose job to get to plastic surgery to be that she's allowed to do that? Or is he saying no? He's talking about a case where it's a very specific type of situation where that individual girl's having a tough time, and you know the Rav agreed that you know this if this would really, really help her, then maybe there's room to be made. Well, you can't automatically say that every case Rav Moshe would say is permitted.
And I'm sorry, just still dealing with the face.
Yeah.
Breast augmentation, very flat-chested girl.
Right.
And Rav Moshe says the same thing.
Okay, so l'chora in my mind, I think that what he's saying here would be the same issues in that case as well, and if it would be mutter there, it would be mutter in this case, presumably. If you look at the next piece here, from Rajachter wrote, he has an article about this question of cosmetic surgery. I originally got this from his online pieces. It's now in his book called Gray Matter, which I have at home if you'd like to read it. So he says the same. He makes the same point. An important question that emerges from this tshuva of Rav Moshe: does this tshuva constitute a sweeping endorsement of the propriety of cosmetic surgery provided that it benefits the patient and is performed with his or her consent? Or perhaps Rav Moshe's permissible ruling applies only in a situation where the surgery is of great need, such as the specific case that Rav Moshe adjudicated. Would Rav Moshe permit one to undergo certain kinds of laser surgery, of eye surgery, in order to avoid the inconvenience of wearing eyeglasses or contact lenses? Rajachter writes, I am unsure how to resolve this question. I think today it's generally accepted that eye surgery is generally permitted in this kind of situation. But there again, I think you could say that has more of a medical benefit than here. Cosmetic surgery in our case is not so clear that there's an actual benefit. And this is a major question for Moshe that has not been resolved. How far was Moshe willing to go here? And a lot of this will depend on the shikul hadas of the posek, meaning what does the posek feel? And also, just looking at the specific case in front of you, who is the person that's asking you the shiloh? What does he or she need? How important is it that she do this? And again, that may go back to the question of, are there other psychological problems here that maybe going to a therapist will better solve than the surgery? Again, that may be a factor the posek will take into account. Even if it's permitted, the posek will be very, very hesitant about it in applying it in a more broader scale than, let's say, perhaps Rav Moshe was talking about. Or maybe not, depending on who you ask. That's another approach. There are other poskim that disagree with Moshe. There are other poskim that would seem to say that the issue of chavala by itself is not necessarily sufficient to allow it. And we'll see in the next case, the Chelkos Yaakov and the Minchas Yitzchak, and another poskim are not necessarily comfortable with permitting plastic surgery simply on the basis of questions of chavala and the definition of chavala by itself. They feel that the derech nitzayon idea is not necessarily the way that we have to, that we pass in halacha l'mayis, and just because that's what the Rambam says, it doesn't mean that halachically anything which is not derech nitzayon is permitted. That may be the main situation of chavala, but that doesn't mean that any case that you feel like whenever you feel like it, you can just say, okay, just do cosmetic plastic surgery and be done with it, no problem. So that remains that issue remains a major machlokas when it comes to that. Any other questions before we move on to the next part? Okay. Okay, I actually take that back. The Minchas Yitzchak actually, in one of his Jews, actually seems to be on Rav Moshe's side here. I think he actually does seem to agree with Rav Moshe's idea of Derech Nitzayon. Okay. Let's go on to the next step. Does psychological illness count as being somebody who's a chola, who's sick? Meaning that let's say that you don't agree with this approach of Rav Moshe. Okay, and this we'll see the tshuva, the Chelkos Yaakov here, and the next tshuva doesn't necessarily agree with Rav Moshe. But even if you don't agree with Rav Moshe, is there room to say that maybe a psychological illness or a psychological problem is halakhically sufficient to classify you as a sick person, and therefore the permission of the doctor to cure you would apply in any case? That's the next question. So the Chelkos Yaakov, Rav Yaakov Breisch, who lives in Switzerland, deals with this question in Chelek Choshen Mishpat Sivan Lamed Aleph. This is now number 4 here. He says here, "V'dvar she laso," and this is a very similar case. "Imuter levesula lasos la'atzmani tuach alachotem." Can a woman who's not yet married can she get surgery on her nose, a nose job? And look in the parentheses, plastic operation. Okay, liasheru laktina, to straighten out her nose and to make it smaller. V'os and zos liyofi. People do this for beauty. So that she can find a good shidduch. And again, here also, the question is, how far is he going here? Here, I get the impression maybe he's going a little farther than Rav Moshe, meaning the case that he's talking about is that she's really afraid she's not going to get a good shidduch. Not that it'll be easier for her, but rather she's really going to have difficulty because the way that her face looks is not something that would be attractive to prospective suitors. That's the impression I get from the tshuva. Again, it's not so clear exactly how far he's willing to, how far he's taking that here. And again, it's up to the judgment of the posek when it comes to this question. Is it something which she really looks very, she looks weird, she looks unusual? Or is it, no, she just is not comfortable with herself because she has self-esteem problems, and really she looks perfectly fine. Okay, she's not the prettiest girl out there, but, you know, she has to be trained to understand, to appreciate how Hashem made her, and even if it's not a halakhic point, but hashgraphically, you know, maybe that's the right approach, that you have to explain to her that Hashem created everybody differently, and you shouldn't be so concerned with exactly how you look. The right person will find you. Hashem created you a shidduch. Your shidduch will find you, and he will learn to love you as well, even if your nose is a little bit less straight or more crooked than it should have, than maybe you would hope that it would have been. That's the question.
And this is also, it's not, I mean, I'm not seeing the answer yet, but it's not so helpful if it's in the sense that here it's a purpose that you can understand in the halakhic framework, in the halakhic world, the concept of shidduch.
Right.
As opposed to someone who just is mentally, you know, they suffer mental anguish because of the way they look.
Right.
There's no reason, rhyme or reason to it.
Right.
It's not going to help them get a job or a shidduch or anything else.
You'll see from the answer that I think that according to the Chalkos Yaakov, it may not make a difference, meaning the same principle would apply on both, if it's legitimate, meaning it's a legitimate case of that. So he quotes here about Tosas and Shabbos. Tosas Shabbos, Daf Nunim, and Bezer, and Maschel B'Shevil, basically wants to say, Tosfos there is dealing with a specific type of situation when it comes to Isurei Shabbos. Basically, what Tosfos wants to say is that the part of the heter of Kavod HaBrios, okay, that we apply in certain situations to allow you to override an Isur Drabanan. In some situations of either, let's say, carrying Drabanan on Shabbos, other situations. Basically, what Tosfos wants to say is that if you're embarrassed to walk among other people, that may already be sufficient to permit you to violate an Isur Drabanan in very specific situations of Kavod HaBrios, because Ein Lecha Tzar Gadol Mizeh, that is the worst type of pain, of stress, even though it's not physical. Okay, it's totally mental, but the fact if you're embarrassed to walk in public, then that's good enough. Then he quotes here also a very interesting application here. Tosfos and Tanis, Daf Dalad, Amud Aleph, he says, "Degabi isha l'dayik alma el yofi." People look at women for their beauty. Now, again, this is not exactly the approach that we want to present today completely by itself, but certainly, you know, when it comes to the word of the shidduch, for sure this is true, that a man does look at a girl to see, you know, is she attractive or not. That's definitely something which is a factor. And at least in that context, certainly that can play a role here. So the Chalkos Yaakov says, based on these two factors, imkei v'nitin didan de'istarta, we have both of these points here, right? The mistama hi busha im chotma, she is mistama, she's embarrassed to walk in public with her nose. V'lech b'chavrusa, to walk in public with her friends. V'mnesha isha miskanes b'yara chaverta, because a woman always looks at her friends to see how much better she looks than herself. Again, we're going to reserve judgment on that for now, but the idea is definitely well taken. V'chiyadua gam b'yofi chaverta, or with the beauty of her friend, and certainly in this case, if the girl is having a complex, you know, then certainly that is definitely an issue. And since many generally people look at women for beauty, and again, that we're not going into that question right now about the value of that, but in terms of the practical world, certainly in terms of a shidduch, and maybe even in other ways as well, you don't have any greater tsar than this. That in a case of mental tsar, it's permitted to even cut off a limb or to let blood. The aim is having shemosa chabur, and there's no problem of making a chabur. Meaning, according to the Chalkos Yaakov, the bottom line is that when you have a situation of mental anguish, okay, based on, in this case, being very embarrassed to walk in public, and especially in a case of a girl, of a female, who is very conscious of the way she looks, the Chalkos Yaakov is willing to paskin that is sufficient reason to allow chavala the same way as a doctor can cure you, and that would be permitted. That's a very, very important pasak halacha as well. Again, not all the poskim agreed with that, but again, a very, very, very important approach here. And again, something which a posek has to weigh very, very carefully, because again, you want to make sure that the girl realizes that she can't just do whatever she wants, and there is a value to understanding that God made you a certain way for a reason. But at the same time, if you're able to recognize that this is a real problem, okay, if this really is a psychological problem, and this will help solve the problem, make her feel better, and really make her more comfortable, then absolutely it is the job of a posek to be sensitive to that, and he's able to take into account this concept of Tosfos and the Chalkos Yaakov, that you can indeed take this type of mental tsar very, very seriously when it comes to this question of chavala. Okay, any questions before we go on to the last part? Okay, when it comes to sakana, sakana is a very, very important question as well. Is there any question of risk when it comes to the issue of plastic cosmetic surgery? And we know, of course, you're not allowed to place yourself in a situation of danger. That is definitely something which the halacha does not allow. If you go back up to the medical section, it says that we definitely saw at the end of the, in the middle of the medical section, that there is an element of risk. It said here, there is always risk with any surgical procedure. However, as a patient, you can play an important role in reducing your risk by providing a full and complete health history to your surgeon. And it gives one example here of a very, very rare type of complication, whatever it is. Basically, again, there is risk, but it doesn't seem to be that there's any more risk in this procedure than there is in any other type of surgery, of just the fact that you're undergoing surgery. And therefore, again, the question is going to be, how important is it to engage in the procedure in the first place? You know, depending on how much importance you attribute to the procedure, that may determine your halachic position on the issue of sakana. If you look at the Minchas Yitzchak here, there's actually, I'm sorry, I have two tshuvas here, the Chalkas Yaakov and the Minchas Yitzchak. I put them both, and they're a little bit long, so we're not going to read them all inside now. But basically, what they want to say is that when it comes to the issue of sakana, again, there may be a limit to, you know, what is considered to be a problem of sakana. And basically, what they want to say here is the following. The Chalkas Yaakov says that it is permitted to place yourself in this type of sakana, number one, because doctors are supposed to try to cure the patient, and therefore, if you accept that this is a case where he needs to cure because of the psychological problems, it may be permitted. Number two, we do a lot of things that are dangerous. Okay, we go in a car, we go in an airplane, right? Other kinds of things. And generally, the principle is called dashu barab. It's something which is generally well accepted in society that people do, even despite a small amount of risk. Then, halachically, it also may be permitted. And therefore, he says here also, this is not a major risk, and halachically, there may be room to permit it. Shlomo Zalman Orbach and the Minchas Shlomo also permits this in the same way that other surgeries are permitted. The Shevet Halevi or Vosner seems to say that it's a problem. He thinks that any element of sakana is not sufficient. Is not permitted to place yourself in when it's not for a good reason. And apparently, he felt that in this case, it's not a good reason. So again, at the end of the day, and the Minchas Yitzchak is not sure. He goes back and forth. At the end of the day, the bottom line, halacha l'maaseh, is going to be, again, that's going to depend on the posik and the individual case of the person that's asking you the question. If the posik feels it's a good enough reason that the surgery is warranted, then I think that usually they'll say that the sakana is not necessarily a problem.